Okay, Ian, can you help me? I've been having a hard time getting a song out of my head.
Nice. Where'd you find that?
There we go. I'm a journalist. I'm a journalist, yeah. First and foremost.
Investigative reporter.
Investigative reporter. Who is that guy?
Yeah, that was many years ago. I was doing music stuff. So there's some of it still out there, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Adam Lewis, thank you for joining us on Deer Talk. Now, in case you don't know, Adam is a deer and deer hunting contributor for the magazine. He's got his own podcast, Deer IQ, as you can see on his hat. He's well entrenched in the whitetail world, but a long time ago, I think he was an aspiring country music singer down in Nashville.
Yeah, I was down there for 3 years doing that and writing songs and stuff, and apparently there's still some circulating out there.
It took me a while, yeah, to find it, but I found it. I think it was a YouTube page.
Probably.
Where there was like several different artists had their stuff housed, but your website was no longer available, so I had to do a little bit of work there. People say, how do you find that stuff? I said, you got to understand, I was an investigative reporter for 4 years out of college, so I can find stuff on people.
He can dig up the dirt.
No, it's not dirt. It's good stuff. That one was called Up North, and the next one I was going to watch was called Staycation. So there's a couple good songs on there. Adam, thanks for joining us. Today we're talking about deer. And if you guys have been following through the magazine, you know, we've been following hot topics from across the country. And, you know, a lot of the hot topics come up from the big deer hunting states. Adam is from Michigan. He lives in southern Lower down in Saginaw County. And don't let that shy you from this podcast, because what's going on there is going on everywhere. And that's what I want to talk about today. Something you have written recently, Adam, I wrote just a crib note for me. It's called Time for a Change. And it was your views on deer populations in Michigan particularly. I say this kind of can be extrapolated across the board. And some of the things that you see are going on and ideas for change. So let's dive into that a little bit. Let's talk about Michigan in particular. It's a state that I've followed closely in my 30 years here at deer and deer hunting, because it's been a powerhouse. But what is the current state of the state for Michigan whitetail hunting?
Well, it's different for all over, for different parts of the state. The UP populations are really down. The harvest was really down this year. Northern Lower is doing moderately. Southern Lower still have a lot of deer. That's where most of the deer are in Michigan, is the southern part of the state, which is where I live. But the DNR is realizing that, because of, I think, deer hunters are decreasing all over, right, that the hunters aren't getting the job done as far as managing the herd, which is a big problem, right? So they're trying to, and I think DNR agencies all over the nation probably are dealing with this problem of, okay, hunter numbers are decreasing. What do we do about that? Because deer hunters are the number one source and tool for managing the deer, right? So how do we deal with that? But one of the big things that happened this last year was about the same time, the NDA, National Deer Association, came out with this article that basically graded states and their doe harvest, right? And Michigan was like failing, doing really poorly. And at the same time, our head DNR guy, Chad Stewart, came out with an open letter to all hunters in Michigan, basically admonishing a bit and also half begging hunters in the southern part of the state to take more does, right? And the last 2 years is the only 2 years Michigan has actually had mandatory harvest reporting. Before that, it's just been surveys and stuff. So we get real-time data, and, you know, those two things, especially that letter from Chad, really did nothing to the harvest this past year. And so they now have come out with this management initiative where they, you know, called on a bunch of people to submit, they want to talk about it. Like, what do we need to do? They're more open now, I think, than ever to solving this problem of managing the deer herd, because since I was a kid, you know, it's kind of the take on the DNR in Michigan has been distrust, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what they're doing, and it's mismanaged, which I think there's been a lot of that. There's also the hunter side of that too, in our part in that too. But that's kind of where we are is, okay, everybody knows there's a shift has happened in the hunting world as far as lack of hunters and that issue, and also there needs to be a change in how we manage it. And so that's kind of where all this has come to a head here recently.
So I want to bring up a couple points based on that. Just from the data, from what I know, Michigan's five-year average harvest is 367,000 deer, which when you look at that, pretty good. However, if you look back at Michigan over the past 30 or 40 years, you had years in there that were, I mean, Michigan was close to number one, 400, 450, 500,000 deer. Granted, it wasn't a mandatory reporting, but it was pretty accurate, I would say. And you were looking at, you rivaled Pennsylvania as far as number of hunters. Pennsylvania was pushing 1 million back in the day. Michigan was 700,000, 800,000. I know you're down to about 540,000 now. Yeah. I'm familiar with the UP. It's a boom or bust situation up there because of weather situations, habitat situations. And with habitat, mostly you have overbrow situations. You have a bad winter. It's going to take years for that to come back. And then the habit fragmentation of traditional deer yarding, different story. It's night and day. If you're not familiar right. with it, Michigan is two different worlds, not two different parts of a state. It's two different worlds. But when you look at lower Michigan, especially southern Michigan, which you're telling me is where the lion's share of the deer are, what has changed there as far as a population density? And has it been population density and hunter management as far as, I know it used to be a huge baiting state. And with that many people, I always said, you're talking about guys who are hunting 10 acres, maybe 20, very small properties. Has that affected this population shift as far as not being able to harvest as many deer?
I would think so. I'm not an expert on all this, but I think one thing has happened. So to kind of back up, so yeah, in the 90s, I think mid-90s was our peak of hunters as well as deer according to the DNR, right? And I remember as a kid, I was a teenager at that point, so I was gun hunting and doing all that. We hunted a woods that me and my dad that was 25 acres, and this just gives an idea, right? And so there were neighbors to the east that had 30 acres, and there was a couple guys hunting that. It was me and my dad gun hunting the 25. To the west, there was a couple guys in a 10-acre chunk. And then to the north, there was, I think, an 80-acre piece, and there was usually like 6 to 8 guys on that.
Yep.
Guns are going off everywhere, and, you know, everything's getting shot, right? You didn't pass a deer, you know, because you knew if you did that they'd just shoot it, right? So it was really highly competitive, and there was high deer numbers too. I think at that point, somewhere in the mid-90s, the DNR realized there was this explosion of deer, and in the thumb, they issued a bunch of block permits, doe permits, all this stuff, and people just went out and shot everything. And then the years following that, people complained. I remember this vividly. People would complain about, I'm seeing no deer. Like, where'd all the deer go? It's like, well, we shot them all, you know. But I think part of the problem is less deer hunters. So I went out in 2022, the last time I hunted my father's property, and I think I heard a couple shots opening morning, and they were really far off. And usually it's like hundreds of shots everywhere, right? So I think there's less hunters in general. I think some of the issue with getting access is an issue now, as far as like, you don't, if you don't own it, you got to lease it, or you're on state land, right? So I think that's a dynamic that's at play too. And I think it's just less hunters in general.
Less hunters in general. And that's, this is a topic just on that specific topic within the topic that I could talk to you about all day, because right. It's similar here. It's similar in all the big deer hunting states. Now you get to the South, it's a different dynamic, because if you're looking at Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, Florida, you're talking that is like big leases, a lot of population, but managed differently. Now with Michigan in particular, I see the problem that you have now with, and one of the biggest points that you make is the state in as the QDMA or whatever they're calling themselves now, NDA, brings up is a failing grade on doe harvest. Well, when you take 200,000 or 300,000 hunters, which I'd say salt of the earth guys and gals who are hunting on 10 acres or 15 acres, can't bait anymore. Let's face it, if you're hunting 10 acres and you don't have a food plot and you can't bait,
right.
You know, you can go sit in a Kmart parking lot and see as many deer as you're going to see there, because it's just That's not going to happen. So you're and right or wrong, I'm not here to argue that. I might if you prod me enough. But you're taking those people out of the woods, and now you're saying, well, we have not you. I'm saying people in general are saying, we have a problem. We can't harvest enough does. Well, maybe it is a problem with, now you have bigger land managers who want to do trophy management. Yeah, they want to shoot some does, but they simply can't keep up. Is that, you think, some of the problem?
Yeah, definitely could be. Yeah, for sure. And I think how regulations are structured, too, has led to that. You know, there in that letter from Chad Stewart last year, he mentioned, you know, we're too buck-centric. We are focused on hunting bucks and shooting bucks only. And I would agree with that. Like, we have two buck tags. Why? I don't know.
You have two. Hopefully, that you can go out gun season and shoot two bucks?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, can shoot.
You don't have to wait. Like here, you get two, but you can shoot one during bow season and one during gun season.
No.
By you could go out and two bucks show up. You could lay them both down if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and so in that, too, the gun season starts November 15th, which is like the heat of the rut. And so, you know, guys, it very easily can shoot bucks, I'd say, because of that. Also, I think our structure, it just promotes it, you know. So they realize it's a problem, but they haven't changed the regulations to actually help that. And I think our goals are kind of off as a state, and we can get into that if you want to. But the two-buck tag thing really encourages that, I think, and has for a long time. And also things like, even, you know, this is maybe controversial, but I think we need to talk about these things. Youth seasons, like, what are they actually accomplishing the way they're set up? And in Michigan, you can shoot whatever you want. As a youth hunter, you can hunt at any age, really.
You get like one tag, right? And
I think they can take one buck, but they can take does. They can fill any doe tags they
okay,
want.
Okay.
But the problem is the data. So that is before any other season start, right? It's like mid-September. You got summer deer in these fields, a lot of bean field hunting, right? And they're very visible. All these bucks and velvet are just have shed, right? And the data from the last 2 years the DNR has actually collected is for the youth season is 3.6 bucks for every doe taken.
Wow.
And so that's, in my mind, that is encouraging this continued culture of just shooting bucks, right? We're training the young generations to continue that and just focus on bucks. So, yeah, regulations don't help where we're at either, I don't think.
You know, you bring up some good points there, and it's one of the, I was going to ask you, I'm going to kind of steal one of the things I was going to ask you, because you do have some solutions that you have in the piece that you wrote. If you guys have followed me long enough, you know that I'm vehemently opposed to state mandated antler regulations, restrictions. However, and why is that? The reason I am is because it just throws a wet blanket on anybody. Whether it's a kid or a person, you know, first-time hunter who's 30 or an older person, not necessary, especially in this age where we're screaming about chronic wasting disease and blah, 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 blah. However, Adam's got an idea there that I think is worth investigating on any state level. If you have a situation where you get multiple buck tags, you're saying have yeah, you can shoot your first buck, whatever you want, but then there would be some kind of restriction on that second one.
Maybe. And Michigan's done that before where they've had a restricted second tag. Like my, so with Michigan, we actually don't have data, as far as I know, on the age structure or sex ratio. Like it's been kind of thought and accepted for a while that it's way out of whack, right? We have a lot of younger bucks. We have way more does than bucks. And in my mind, that's a goal that needs to be addressed in with hunters and with regulations, right? So if a state's already balanced, I think it's maybe a little different. If you're shooting for a goal to balance the herd a little better as far as age structure, as far as buck doe ratios, I think you have goals to get you there as well, right? And so I think for Michigan, I think what makes sense is a one buck tag, because like you said, I think APRs, there's been a lot of push for that here. And the DNR actually had a survey from 2017 that this independent company did that suggested they go to at least one buck tag and maybe APRs for a lot of reasons. One of them was because it actually encouraged young hunters. The young hunters in the survey were more interested in that than just the way it was. And I think it's because it made them at least feel like they were hunting better deer, right? But anyways, in Michigan, I feel one buck tag would really help because it doesn't limit what you can take, like you're saying, right? It doesn't put a restriction. You can shoot whatever you want. But it kind of forces you then to think about what you shoot. And at the same time, if you're going to fill the freezer and it takes two or three or four, depending on your family, deer to fill the freezer, then you got to shoot does. And if the doe issue is a problem, then it naturally kind of encourages that. It also would help, I think, manage the age structure issue too, and letting more bucks get older and things like that. So I think one buck is a better solution to help with some of our problems. And I think also the APR thing, a negative with that people brought up is, if you put, you know, let's say four on a side or whatever it is, you actually can be encouraging shooting good genetic deer that are young.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's one thing. That's one thing that is shown. They call it high grading. The other thing, like I said, we could really go down some rabbit holes here, but APRs in general, to me, it's kind of even ironic that we talk about it, because like on the other side of the fence or in the next room, we're like, wait, isn't there this big supposed like looming storm of chronic wasting disease? So why are we allowing bucks to grow older when they're more susceptible to be having chronic wasting disease and passing it on? And then people say, well, Dan, you know, we got to keep people interested. I'm like, wait a second, the Sistine Chapel's burning here. If it's burning, we should not be hampering. And I do see, the reason I say this, because I talk to people on both sides of this fence, I see that guy with 10 acres or 20 acres or however many, if he's a private landowner, and you're like, I can kill one deer, that's it. Now, I don't know what land prices are in Michigan. Here where I'm sitting, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 an acre for land. So you want to go buy a 40, which you think you've got a great hunting piece. People are paying $400,000 for that. Yeah, you can kill one deer. I see problems on all over the place, but I don't think it's a bad idea for if you've got multiple tags to have some restraint, because like you said, then it is going to almost force you. Well, it's definitely going to force you to be more selective if that's your goal. If you're not and you're happy with a spike, shoot the spike. That's fine. But it's going to force you to say, I actually have to do pitch in and help manage the doe herd more than I have been. Probably,
right.
Especially if you in areas where you do have density problems. Deer Talk Now is brought to you by Full Range Mounting Systems. These mounting systems are a great way to manage all of your mounts in a stylish and organized manner. We are using their pedestal mount here on the podcast set for two shoulder mounts, and it looks just awesome. Be sure to check out their mounting systems at fullrangesystems.com. And for 15% off your order, use code DTN. One thing that I will say in defense of of DNR departments, Michigan, you know, all these big ones, is they're not lying to you about the deer. They're doing is the best they can to estimate those populations. I mean, okay, if they come along and say your county's average is whatever, 75 deer per square mile going into the season, is it 100%? No, you're not going to have 75 deer definitely in your square mile, but there could be that guy or that, you know, paper company or whatever that owns land that they have the deer there. So I would like to add that to the conversation for anybody who's thinking about that. One of the other things, educate me, Adam, on what is the baiting situation there in lower, well, I think it's banned in the, is it banned in the Lower Peninsula?
Yeah, you can't bait. We haven't been able to bait for, I don't know, quite a few years now. So there's no baiting.
How did that affect things once that went through?
You know, I hunt a lot of public land. So obviously that I haven't seen any bait pails on public land, which I'm kind of surprised that people haven't tried it, but I haven't seen any out there. So that's really affected, I think, public land hunting where guys would have all these big bait piles and just drawing deer. So that makes that harder. But honestly, I think it'd be interesting to know how many people are actually baiting, because I think a ton of people still bait.
That happens.
They sell bait like crazy at all the gas stations all season long. So it's you can still sell it, right? It's just illegal to use it.
Just like fireworks and everything else. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's
you can sell it, but you can't do it according to the law.
Right.
What about the people you talk to? Has it affected how they hunt? Especially some of these smaller, has it good or bad? Do they say, no, I don't see any deer anymore? Or, oh, actually, it made things better? What is the word on the street?
I'm not totally sure on that one. I think it has changed the fact of, you know, push people toward having to food plot,
mm-hmm.
you know, having to invest in that. And again, that's money, right? Do you hunt somewhere that you can actually do that if you have permission? Can they allow you to, will they allow you to do that? And then there's investment of equipment and time and all that putting in the food plot. So it's definitely.
And hoping it grows.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it. And it's become, and I think I've heard you talk about this before, or somebody on your podcast, of it's becoming a rich man's game.
Yep. It 100% right? is. And 100% is. I've got.
That's tough.
I've got thousands of dollars invested, and I have a very small property, but I've got a tractor and a tiller and all this stuff, and I do it because I like to do it. Not necessarily, it's like I think that's the only way I can kill a deer. I like to do it, but yeah, it is definitely a rich man's sport. And that's where my heart always goes out. I've always used my dad, rest his soul, he passed away last year. He hunted a small property, 4 acres outside of Milwaukee, and, you know, had he not thrown out an ice cream pail full of corn, he would have never saw a deer. And the joy that brought him when he was 85 years old, last year at 87 years old, he killed his last deer before he passed away. I will stand toe-to-toe with anybody. Was that he was doing a service. And I know that there's a lot of guys doing that, doing a service. He'd kill anything. He would kill doe fawn, didn't care. He wanted venison. And when you see that, and I also understand there's guys that actually work for a living. I mean, I grew up, right. he was a carpenter, you know, hauling drywall up and down stairs and stuff. And you'd maybe get to take a day off during gun season, maybe one or two days. And there's a lot of guys out there that I feel for that. And, but like I said, that is unique to your state, my state, same thing. You can't bait here, but you go to any Quick Trip or Cenex or something, there is piles and piles and piles of corn and whatever else they can. And I know, oh, I'm feeding the pigs or something. You know, no, they're not. Right. You know,
I'm going to another state.
I'm going to another state. Or I'm going up north where there's one little spot where you can. No, I know you're not. But the people who dismiss that want to think like, were the problem. No, that is a symptom of, like what you said, there's guys who love to do this, but they don't have the time or money or even ambition, whatever their reasons, to do it the way we might be doing it. Okay, That's my soapbox for the mention here. We talked about baiting. We talked about APRs. I actually talked about adult bucks with chronic wasting disease. Well, let's talk about that for a second. What is the chronic wasting disease situation where you're at? And is that the driving force to bringing those densities down?
I think it was initially when it was found. So there's like this, I think, 4 or 5 county, don't quote me on that, but there's this county region in southern Michigan where they found it. And I think it was starting in 2018, they put restrictions on transporting things out of these counties and stuff. And that was pretty strict for a couple years, and then all of a sudden it kind of disappeared. I don't know if they just said, oh, we can't regulate this or what, or if it caused too much. They thought it was affecting hunting too much, so they're like, oh, we're going to back off of this. It's still, you know, I don't think it's changed much, but that's, I think, one of the major reasons they cite as far as no baiting is the CWD thing.
But you can plant 3 acres of turnips and let deer mouth those things from September through February, and that's okay. But I digress.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, it's like
grapes and all that stuff. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is true. That's my rebuttal to anybody who says, well, Dan, you know, baiting's different because you're putting corn there week after week. I'm like, a gallon of corn, you know, as opposed, I'll show you my field right now. It still has turnips in it. And those deer, they'll take a bite and move on. Seriously, if this is a fire, we're approaching it the wrong way. Let's go back to that youth season idea. I kind of like it. I kind of like your idea of either A, really incentivizing doe hunting during those early seasons, because I am all about getting kids involved, but how many times do we see, you know, I'm kind of going down a slippery slope here, but you know, I wanted my daughters to kill a buck. Each one of them shot a doe the first time out. And that was just because that was the first one to show up. But what's wrong with that? What's wrong with saying, yeah, right, you can go out in September and kill a deer, but it's got to be an antlerless deer?
Yeah, so I talked to Chad Stewart this summer for the podcast, and I brought this up. I said, what do you think about doe only for youth season? He said, that's a terrible idea. I said, well, why? And he's like, well, I don't know. I just don't want to put limits on kids.
Okay.
And in my opinion, we should be able to say no to our kids, right? For the greater good, right? So I think, and he mentioned this, and they're probably right. There's not a huge number of deer taken in youth season compared to our total harvest. Okay. But I think there's a huge component of first education. Like, you can still educate your or mentor your kid or somebody else's kid to the things of deer hunting, the same exact things, and shoot a doe. And at the same time, you're helping the doe problem at least a little bit, right, by harvesting more does. And also, it's the education of, hey, we can pass bucks and shoot does, and that's okay. Like, you're ingraining that and educating the young generation with that. And I think another point to make is just the psychological effect of, if you go out and you're a little kid, let's say you're 8 years old, and you see all these deer in this field and they're acting very tame-ish, right, which they do in early fall, summer, basically, and you see these big bucks and you shoot this real big buck, it's kind of like you got the prize right off the bat. Mm-hmm. There's nothing left to draw you into hunting season, at least psychologically, I think. But if I go out there and I'm a kid and I see all these big bucks but I can't shoot it, like, that is a ton of incentive. It's the dangling carrot that's going to pull me in to the normal seasons because I want to be able to hunt those bucks, right? And that's a huge draw. I remember when I was a kid, I had to wait, you know, to a certain age to hunt, you know, so it just built anticipation. And I think by, you know, saying no to our kids, it actually is a better benefit for them. And, you know, actually making them wait, it's not going to kill them. You're still teaching them the same things, but I think it's a principle of, even with like economics, I think I brought that up in the article, like, how do we pay people when they do a job? Do we pay them all up front, or do we pay them when they're done with it? Because that gives them incentive. It's the dangling carrot, right? It keeps them moving forward. And I think we need some of that in hunting, and I think that's a perfect situation in youth season to help with hunter recruitment, which is a huge issue, right? And back to that survey I was talking about, the survey said the same thing, that even the youth were for things like APRs because they felt it would make better hunting for them. And so I think something like that makes sense. It's not really denying your youth something, it's just training them and doing something that's better long term, in my opinion.
You write that article, I'll print it. That's a great topic. Because I agree with you. When I was younger, I'm much older than you. When I was younger, we had rabbits and squirrels and an occasional pheasant that we would find. And we didn't get to go to deer camp until we were 16. So we had to wait. And then when we got to deer camp, there weren't doe tags. There was what they called party permits, and it was one doe tag for the whole group of 16 guys. And the carrot for the kid, the first time hunter, was they got to shoot the doe for the party permit if they shot it on opening day. If they didn't shoot it on opening day, then they had to wait again. But there were it was a reverse situation. The bucks weren't available, does were there, but you couldn't kill them anyways. So I mean, I spent years and years and years. Well, actually, I take that back. I shot a buck the first year, but that was by sheer luck. But I really like that idea. And people say, "Well, that's crazy. You're turning." I'm like, no, it's like stepping into a stadium and hitting a grand slam your first trip to the plate. And it's like, well, I did it. Now what? Well, yeah, you
Right.
can go back and play defense. I don't want to do that, you know, or you can bunt the guy over next time. I don't want to do that. I want to swing for the fences. I think it's actually not a terrible idea. To Chad's point, I understand there aren't a lot of those deer being killed. If you do it pound for pound, maybe a couple thousand spread across the entire state.
Right.
So do we really want to do that? I don't know. I think there's two different subjects there that should be talked about, but I think it's a very valid idea. Let me see where we are for time. I'm going to ask you also, Adam, you had one other point in there I wanted you to expand upon, was you're talking about gun season, and I know most gun seasons outside of maybe Illinois and Iowa and Kansas and some other ones, you have specific days. Ours is the Saturday before Thanksgiving. It runs for 9 days, traditional firearm season. Michigan, I think you guys get to go for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, traditionally, I don't know when this exactly was enacted. I could look up the history, but since I was a kid, it's November 15th. And I think that's when my dad was growing up too, is November 15th is the opener, and it goes for 2 weeks, right to the end of the month. That's how it's always been. And so it falls right in the rut. And recently, so there's like a couple of days after that ends, a couple of day break, and then muzzleload season starts through the middle of December. And so the last 3 or so years, in most of the southern part of the state, they've changed that from muzzleload to any legal weapon. So it's basically a month-long gun season.
Wow. And
Yeah.
how does that shake out for harvest, you know?
It doesn't. I mean, talking to Chad, most of the deer are taking the first day or first 2 days of gun season, and then it just
Straight
drops
down.
from there. And so them extending that, and they've even done like in January doe gun seasons. He's like, they don't get much harvest out of that.
Yeah.
So extending gun seasons or extending seasons don't seem, it appears, to help with that much harvest.
Doesn't add much to it. We found the same thing here because ours
Yeah.
is pretty much the same. All sorts of different seasons. They've got the regular firearms, then the muzzleloader season kicks in right after that, and then they have what they call holiday hunts, which people hate. It's like, you know, 3 days around Christmas, 3 days around New Year's. An idea that you had was to maybe split up firearm seasons.
Yeah, so I'm curious though, why do people hate those holiday hunts?
I think they hate them because it's like by that time, the deer herd has been so pressured that like
Okay.
you're going to go out and if you're bow hunting, you can't bow hunt for a buck during those holiday hunts. It's firearms, you know. I mean, you could bow hunt, but you have to bow hunt for does. And the deer are so pressured because of before that. I mean, leading right up into that, you've had it's 16 days of just about, I think, 15 or 16 days of firearm season.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing, you know, that initial right. pressure is the lion's share of the gun harvest, which is the big mm-hmm. hammer, always will be, followed by, yeah, you can go hunting, go out there, but you're not going to see anything because right. they've been like, pressured beyond belief.
Right. So, yeah, the idea I put in the article was, okay, don't do it November in the middle of the rut. Don't do it November 15th. And if you do, maybe split it up into three or even four short gun seasons that are split up by 3 or 4 weeks. And so that way you have multiple first day opportunities. The deer don't get super pressured. It's a few days and then done, and they get a chance to recuperate. They don't feel the pressure as much. And then when the next one hits, it's a surprise again. And I would think you would see much better harvest because of that. You have these multiple opening days, basically. I think that would be a bigger draw to hunters if they're seeing more success and seeing more deer. So, get them excited about actually going out these multiple opening days. I just think it'd be better overall. And you're not, again, stressing the deer herd like you are having, you know, such a super long gun season where the deer just go into hiding, you know. And like you said, that's no fun when you're going out there and like, oh, I might see a doe or something, but that's about it.
Okay, two questions yet on this topic. One, I'm going to give it to the audience. I've hunted both of these states, and I know that there's other states, but I want to hear your comments wherever you're listening to this podcast or watching it. If you live in a state that has that, how has it affected you personally? As far as, like, I know Illinois's got 2 3-day seasons. I've participated in them. Iowa, same thing. Kansas, same thing. How has it affected you? And then, Adam, I want to turn back to you and ask you this question because my friend, who you know, Ted Nugent, he gave me this idea probably 15, 20 years ago. I shouldn't say that I agree with him, but I absolutely do because I just chummed the waters there. But he said, why don't we just have a deer season? When does deer season start? You tell me. September 1st, September 15th, October 1st. You pick the date. When does it end? December 31st, January 15th, whatever. Have a nice day. Here are your tags. You get 2 buck tags. You get 6 doe tags. Whatever it is, go do what you want. Hunt with a bow, hunt with a crossbow, hunt with a rifle. What do you think of that idea?
I don't know. I hate to go against Uncle Ted, and I don't personally know him, but I definitely know Ted. I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. Does any other state do that?
Texas.
Texas does that?
Pretty much. Southern states. Southern states, they do. Some of them do have archery, but like in a lot of those places, you can hunt for months. You could be in the same woods with a crossbow hunter or a rifle hunter.
Yeah.
It's apples and oranges as far as deer populations, but go ahead.
Yeah, part of me likes the idea of, you know, not restricting freedom. I think people have issue with that when you start putting all these restrictions on seasons and stuff. The other part of me thinks it could get a little chaotic. And again, be so strung out, you wouldn't have these. I would be concerned about maybe participation going down because it's so, there's no like one big thing to look forward to. Like, oh yeah, like November 15th here is in Michigan. Oh, the gun opener. Like that's gets everybody out, right? I think it would just kind of dissipate that and it might get just kind of more blah. But I don't know. That's just my take on it.
And then you'd basically have to rewrite the second week of deer camp song. So you'd have that problem. So. I don't know if you know that. There was the Youpers. They came out with that
yeah,
song.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's showing my age too. Do you know that song? Please tell me you do.
Yeah, I know that song.
Okay, thank you. If you didn't know that song and you lived around here, I would highly question your sanity. But okay, that's going to do it for today, Adam. Thank you so much. Let's let everybody, all the listeners, know Deer IQ podcast. Where can they basically find it in the same places? Website?
Yep, they can go to deeriq.com. We have a blog there. where you find some of these different articles. I might even put this one on there that I wrote about the Michigan deer herd. Look up Deer IQ wherever you listen to podcasts, and there's also a YouTube channel. Just look up Deer IQ there, and we got the podcast is on there, but also some other like topical type videos, how to's and stuff like that. So
awesome.
But yeah, thanks for having me on, Dan.
Appreciate it. We very much appreciate it. For Adam Lewis, I am Dan Schmidt. This is Deer Talk Now. Check it out wherever you can find this podcast. If you don't get the video version, it's on our YouTube page, Facebook, and Instagram. And as we leave, I'm going to actually let you guys hear his voice in a different setting here. This is really good. Do you still do this?
Not much.
That's almost like Blake Shelton-esque. All right. You guys find that. I'm going to put the link in the comments so you can find it. That was his former life as a country music singer. Adam, thanks again. We very much appreciate you being on Deer Talk Now.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay.